Welcome to the Zen Stoic Path. On this special episode, I'm actually sharing an interview that my fiance and I did on another podcast called the Emergent Human Podcast with Michael Osterlink. So Michael actually interviews Heather and I on his podcast, asking us about our relationship story, the ins and outs, and how we're able to maintain a successful, happy, healthy relationship. Michael likes to call us his favorite couple, and he has been doing couples work for almost 30 years. So we take this compliment very near and dear to our hearts, and I'm really excited to share this episode with you. Enjoy the show.
Welcome to The Emergent Human, where we explore optimizing health, embodied spirituality, and post-conventional living. I'm Michael Osterlink, a therapist, coach, and educator, and I'm your host. And I'm delighted to have my favorite couple here. This is Victor and Heather. Victor is a liberation coach and trainer, lifelong martial artist, philosophy enthusiast, and the founder of Zen Stoic Philosophy. And Heather is a liberation coach and trainer, meditation facilitator, and occupational therapist with clinical expertise in nervous system regulation, sensory processing, and childhood development. Great to see you guys.
So I'm here with Heather and Victor, who are our favorite couple. And I don't really say that lightly. You know, I've been really fortunate. I'm almost 30 years as a marriage and family therapist, work with dozens and dozens and dozens of families and couples. I've been in the consciousness space for a long time, and I see very unconsciously conscious, consciously unconscious couples.
I think that's the technical term, yes. To describe it.
Try to do the conscious thing in relationships. And I must say, like, you guys, as I like to say, eat your own dog food. I like to say eat your own dog food. Like, you guys live what I would imagine a conscious couple should be doing based on the criteria we talk about in the spiritual communities, which I think is just a really beautiful thing. So I just want to highlight your all's relationship, which I just think is awesome and inspiring to me.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Yeah. So tell, you know, just for the viewing audience, is like, okay, who is Victor and Heather? Mm-hmm. Tell us a little, like, individually about yourself, and just so everyone knows, I'm going to be actually interviewing you guys separately because you guys are amazing coaches, and I want to talk about your businesses and stuff, but I want to talk to you guys presently as a couple. So we'll do much more depth in terms of who you guys are, but just a little bit of background and, like, how you guys got together, and mm-hmm. I want to kind of that story mm-hmm. and how you guys have gotten to the place you've gotten to, which is really exciting. In the fact that by the time you guys watch this interview, this couple will be engaged, which is very, very cool. But so if you want to share your story a little bit, that'd be great. Wonderful. Who you guys are and who you guys are as a couple.
Yeah. What comes up immediately when you ask how we got together, I see it through a lot of synchronicity and guidance. Is what the core of it is, of being guided and then taking that guidance seriously and having a sense of clarity with that. And I feel like that's where we meet. Like, that's literally how we met, but also that's where we meet on a day-to-day basis.
Can you say a little bit more about the guidance? What is this guidance?
Yeah, you want to chunk that down?
Yeah. So one of the things that Heather was saying, or a couple of things she was saying there, she was talking about clarity and guidance and the combination of those two as being a part of, or essentially the process of how we got together and how we met. So I'll speak to the clarity part first, because I think that part is really important, at least in my journey in who I became before meeting Heather. Mm-hmm. That was a big part of it, was clarity. And it was clarity about who I am, what I value, like getting very clear on me. One thing you were mentioning, that we're coaches, and one of the things that I run into with clients all the time, at least in the beginning of working with somebody, is this idea that most people don't know what they want because most people don't know who they are.
Okay. Wow.
And having the clarity of knowing who you are and what you're about and what you value in life is, I would say, the first step in terms of meeting a partner that's actually compatible with you. And that's exactly what happened, right? I dropped a lot of old stories of, like, who I thought I was supposed to be. And I remember, you know, in receiving guidance, essentially, like, the more clear I became about me, the more I seemed to be guided by the universe or by God to meeting Heather. And the way that actually ended up showing up is I got very clear on me. And I thought to myself, okay, what is it that I want to experience in a relationship? Mm. And so in the past, I would write down these like long lists, the things that like all the relationship coaches tell you to do, like, oh, write down all the things you want and all the things that are standards and things you won't tolerate and blah, blah, blah. And like just this checklist ad nauseum, or like I've heard people like, I wrote 6 pages about like my dream person. So I've done that in the past and it just never really worked for me, or it did work. And then I realized it was not at all what I wanted. Like it wasn't at all what was actually in store from a relationship perspective. So I remember being actually like intentionally vague, and I wrote something where I said, I am ready and I trust that I will meet and co-create a relationship with a person who we are both mutually extremely attracted to each other mentally, physically, spiritually, and emotionally. And we will live this kind of life that is adventurous and filled with passion, as well as a safe haven of peace together. And we'll create a family and this and that. So mm-hmm. essentially it was something along those lines mm-hmm. and very vague, but captured the essence of what I was looking for. And 2 weeks later, I meet Heather. Nice. Now here's where the guidance comes in.
Yeah.
We ended up meeting on Hinge, like on the dating app.
Not sponsored.
But I guess this is a testimonial to Hinge.
It worked at least one time.
So we meet on Hinge and Heather and I are having like a good conversation. And all of a sudden, like Heather stops messaging me. I'm like,
oh. Ghost.
I'm like, did I say something wrong? So I'm like, okay, well, I guess I'll just, you know, move on with my life then. And a couple weeks after that, I remember going to this this place called True Rest. It's a float therapy place. So it's where they basically do sensory deprivation tanks. And I would bring my clients there after doing like intensive sessions with them. And I was speaking to the woman at the front desk who I'd met a week prior. And she's like, I met this girl who she was describing to me her perfect partner. And I was like, oh my God, you need to meet my friend Victor. And she's like, oh, well, show me his Instagram. And she shows her and it's me. And she's like, oh, I already know that guy. Like we've been talking. So Heather came and fished me out of the Hinge gutters. Like she rescued me from she rescued me exactly from the inbox. And she sent me her number and then we went on our first date together.
Nice. Nice. So you use the word co-create mm-hmm. and I like to do a dive on that in a moment, but the clarity thing is really interesting. Mm-hmm. You want to talk about the clarity that you came to as well? And then the guidance.
Yeah. What stuck out for me with what you were sharing, because it all feels true and resonates, what feels super true and really potent was when you said, we're a safe sanctuary.
Yeah.
The relationship is a safe sanctuary. So long story short, what I do with the people that I work with is I help people create safe sanctuaries within themselves. Mm-hmm. And that's really the deepest core of what I'm here to do, I believe. And it's because I've been every level of safe to unsafe within my own self and my own inner and therefore outer world. So in calling in and creating a relationship like this, I really had to meet myself and realize all of the ways that I wasn't safe with myself and then evolve into the version of myself that was safe and that felt safe. And I didn't need to latch onto anything or anyone outside of myself to feel comforted or to feel like I could make it through the moment. So it started with me and me mm-hmm. with that safety. And then from there, he did that work as well within himself. And then we came together. And of course, you've actually directly helped us learn the art of co-regulation. So creating safety or almost being each other's safety bridge or
that
sharing in that and calling each other like, hey, this is our normal where we meet. This is, I guess you'd call it a bit of a minimum or a baseline of where we meet. At the very least, we meet in a safe space with each other.
I really like the idea of co-regulation, obviously, because we talk about that too, but I like the idea of both you coming in and doing your inner work to find that internal safe, peaceful, grounded, centered place, and then bringing that as the co-creative process in a relationship. Because mm-hmm. life happens, and I might be cool one day, and the next day I'm having a not so good day, and I'm off balance. And it's nice to have a partner who can model to me that safe place, and we can co-create or co-regulate each other and bring ourselves back to our natural state. So it sounds like some inner work occurred to get you to the point. You guys mind talking about like some of the things you did that helped you find this core place for each of you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that question. Thank you for asking that. For me, it's always been centered around prayer and meditation. And, you know, we actually have like co-trained together at this point. So we all have this amazing, amazing tool belt of modalities and frameworks and all that. This kind of tethers back to what I said about guidance, though, is at the end of the day, I prioritize stepping back and listening to my own inner wisdom, and also continuously practicing surrender and trust and the higher power of my own understanding. So I would say it's just a return again and again and again to trust and faith.
I'd like you to kind of answer the same question, but just a quick follow-up. So if you find yourself kind of off kilter.
Mm-hmm. I do quite often. Yeah. Yeah.
Sometimes. Well, I'm rare cases.
Known to happen a time or two.
I might have seen that once. So prayer and meditation, but is there a particular kind of meditative practices that you find useful for these purposes, or particular types of prayer that you use?
Yeah. Oh, I love that question. So I'm trained in instinctive meditation, which is, long story short, it's structured freedom. So rather than, you know, the more monastic approaches of like, come back to the mantra. And really, for me, I always felt like a dog being pulled on its leash back to the thing of concentration. It just didn't resonate with me. So where I felt myself really come alive was the instinctive meditation path, which is more centered in the elements and in my sense of structure and flow, really taking pause and asking myself and my body, how do you want to move? Mm-hmm. How do you want to breathe? What's coming to you and through you right now? And how can you really embrace that rather than needing a set of rules to, you know, it's just another way of being my own inner guide. And also like dancing it out, moving it out, rather than needing to be like ramrod, straight spine and like ohm. That's just not.
Very embodied practice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Thank you.
And the prayer, is that different, or is prayer part of this embodied practice for you?
The prayer, that's such a good question. No one's ever asked me about that before, so thank you.
Yeah.
It comes out in written form. So it'll be between just stream of consciousness, more like brain dump. And I don't discriminate. I'm literally just like bleh, onto the page. And sometimes it's literally like brain dump, conscious mind garbage. And sometimes it's really that hand of God coming through. And it's just comes back to surrendering and trust. And I usually don't even like read it after. It's just almost none of my business in a way. I'm like, cool.
Okay.
Moving on. Yeah. That's cool. Written prayer usually.
Okay. I like that. Thank you, Heather.
Thank you.
Same question for you. Like, so to get to the point of finding that inner core, that inner peaceful place, then you could help co-create this amazing relationship. What were some of the things that led you to that?
So one of the most profound aspects of inner work that I got to experience, especially right before meeting Heather and right before writing that intention that I shared earlier, was essentially embracing my own aloneness and realizing the difference between aloneness and loneliness.
Wow. Okay.
And in my aloneness, right, I didn't have a partner. I wasn't dating anyone, you know, in the months that were prior to meeting Heather. And I remember in that moment, or in those few months, like I felt a lot of loneliness, like, and a lot of grief for not having a partner. And it was a seemingly very dark time. But a coach of mine pointed out the distinction between aloneness and loneliness. And I meditated on that. And then there was this one evening, I remember I was actually sitting on the couch over here and I was staring at the Christmas tree, right? It was all lit up. And for the first time in my life, I was alone without feeling lonely.
Wow. Okay.
And I'll draw the distinction between those two, because I think it's a really important one. So aloneness is just an objective fact. It's an objective state of affairs, or it could be an objective emotional state, as in you feel disconnected from the outside. It could be in a figurative emotional sense, or it could be like you're literally sitting here by yourself. But loneliness is a judgment against that state, a condemnation of saying that this isn't right or this isn't okay. Now, what I came to realize, and I've been meditating on this idea for a while now, is that the human experience, like as an individual, we're going to feel alone many times throughout the experience. The reason being, especially on this path of seeking wisdom, of developing oneself, of doing the inner work, the experience that a person who does all this inner work is going to have is going to be vastly different from everyone else. It's going to be totally and utterly unique to them. And so the path, or the proverbial mountain that one is climbing for that, you're going to be alone at times. Or sometimes you're going to look around the mountain and it's just going to be you there. And so being able to embrace this fact that I have chosen this path of being totally and utterly myself and sincere has been a difficult one in the beginning, right? Of shedding away all those old stories. But it's also like it began with this aloneness. It was like this void. And when I learned to be alone without being lonely, that was, I would say, the first step. Because when we are alone, it is this beautifully difficult discipline of an encounter with the darkness of the void, I would say. And ultimately, it becomes this meditation where you're becoming very intimate with the idea of the unknown, where all of your old stories and identities and stuff that you were trying to like hold up and bolster to the world start to fall away. And as they're falling away, you begin to stand as a question of who am I, rather than a statement of this is who I am. And in that question space, you allow for that clarity that we were talking about to come in, to come through. And so when I was asking myself, like, who am I? Who am I in this state of aloneness? I started to really become clear on what I valued, what I wanted to experience. And that safe sanctuary, that safe haven was something that came up, something that I've never actually said before to myself before that moment. So like that period of being alone was so important and so key, although initially painful, was very much worthwhile, because it was the meditating on that that was the inner work that preceded us meeting.
That's beautiful. You know, I'm going to start calling you Mr. Distinctions, because I'm just realizing like, you're really amazing at making distinctions. Like most of your program are about distinctions. Mm-hmm. I just heard more distinctions being made. Like, man, he's really good at the distinction thing. On the co-creative process, I kind of want to dive into that. I have to imagine, though, like it's not like you guys did all this inner work and then you guys came together and everything was like perfect. Like you guys are perfect human beings, whatever that means. Like there's still identities we bring into the relationship from our past. Mm-hmm. Whatever they might be, that might be problematic. Like we still need to work through our constructs. So I have to imagine that part of the co-creative process is not only just creation, it's destruction. Like what do we need to continue to be aware of, to deconstruct, to get rid of, so there's room for something new to emerge. If that's true, what might you say were some of the things that, like, as you guys got together and deepened your connection, like, oh, these things are no longer serving me or us?
Mm. Yeah.
I'll let you take this one.
It was a journey for me. It was framed in dysregulation and regulation, as in the inner experience of being like, ew, like, I don't know about that. This is new and unfamiliar. Mm. Because for me, feeling safe with a man was new and unfamiliar. And like every step of that journey of, you know, being more and more close and intimate. So every step of the way, a lot of the steps of the way, I had to take pause, to take space, and to be super self-aware and realize that this was just new for me. And as we've all learned, there is that it's this little trick that the human psyche plays on us, and we have the opportunity to rewrite that pattern. In the beginning, though, the safety and sameness, where something feels safe just because it's what I've always known. Something feels unsafe because it's unfamiliar. So even people will choose that familiar pain over the new expansive, you know, heaven on earth that they're co-creating. So yeah, for me in the beginning, correct me if this is inaccurate, I witnessed somewhat of a love at first sight happen for him.
Accurate.
so solid and so certain and just matter of fact with it. And that was never how I was chosen, never how I was regarded or cherished. That's just not how I was choosing on an unconscious level to be treated.
Right.
And so there were definitely moments of, what's that about? In my system. And I would just tell him like how I felt. And he never, ever made how I was feeling wrong. He never tried to talk me out of how I was feeling or talk me out of my truth. And that was, we could just talk about it. And that was something that we did since our first, second, third dates, of where we just say, what do you want? And where are you at right now? And I think it was like our third date. I literally told you, oh, I just did an inner journey. And I realized that there's this like old crusty pattern of needing to have a really like hot and cold up and down relationship dynamic to feel that it's sexy and alive and exciting. And so, yeah, like really going in deep and being like, this stable, certain platform of just like, I choose you, rain, shine, whatever. Really had to take that in and like be okay with that. And then obviously be really grateful for it and like make that the normal.
And that's great. You're aware of the kind of the pattern of hot, cold, hot, cold, hot, cold.
It was a rude awakening.
Yeah. Wow. Right. Did you have any similar patterns? You're like, ooh, this is showing up and I've seen this in my
so
past.
Not in that regard. Like I knew, I was very clear on like what I wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And what was interesting about our initial interaction is that I was not, for the first time, I wasn't willing to compromise on like what I wanted while simultaneously doing everything that I needed to do to allow her to feel safe in our interactions and in our presence. So essentially what I mean by that is, I think, yeah, it was our third or fourth date that she had had this recognition, but then she came to me and she literally came over for the first time with the intention of like being like, hey, we're like, let's call this off and like, let's just be friends.
I was freaking out.
Yeah. So I remember we're sitting on the trampoline outside and she told me this, and I'm going to give some context or some like preface to like the impact that what she said had on me in this moment. So prior to this date, right, dates 1 through 3, let's say. So date four was when she came over to call it off. So prior to that, I was like super in my head. Like I was smitten by this woman. And
was?
Still am. Especially in that I was smitten and nervous at the same time. And I remember I was asking myself, like we with our clients, we do a lot of work with the unconscious mind. You're very familiar with it. And a lot of the work that we do comes with building a relationship with the unconscious. So we'll often ask our unconscious mind questions for guidance. So I remember asking my unconscious mind, like, is she the one for me? Right? Like, I really wanted to know. I wanted to be certain and be reassured. And my unconscious mind was like, no. And I'm like, no. And it goes, no, we're not going to do that right now. You're just going to enjoy the journey and be
you
pleasantly
don't get
surprised.
To know.
Yeah, you don't get to know. So I stopped asking myself the question, is she the one? And I started asking myself the question instead, like, do I want to see her again? Do I want to continue getting to know her? Do I want to like deepen our relationship and deepen the bond that we have together? So I started asking myself that question instead of, is she the one? Unconscious mind is a silly rascal sometimes in the way that it answers.
Keeps you honest.
Yeah, keeps me honest. And I remember, so mind you, I'm with that in mind, where I was always wondering if she was the one, I simultaneously had the fear of like, oh no, she's going to like call this off. And I was like fearing that up until this moment. And then fourth date comes along and like, here my fear is in the flesh confronting me of like her literally saying like, hey, I don't know, like if this is, you know, right between us, like maybe, you know, we'd be better off with other people. And I remember the response that I gave, I couldn't have planned it because it was something that I'd never said before. So I realize in retrospect that my response could have been, you know, in the past, I would have imagined it being two things. It would have been me being like really complacent or compliant with what she was saying. And be like, oh, yeah, yeah, that's totally okay. Like, I understand. And being like a really like nice guy about it. Mm-hmm. Or I could have taken the approach of, you know, being too cool for school and be like, psh, whatever, like don't flatter yourself. Could have taken any one of those approaches. That's right. Maybe like the dichotomy that I was looking at in the past, which is, you know, like where a lot of my inner work needed to come from. However, I remember just my only strategy with Heather in the courting phase was the strategy of no strategy, which is just to be completely sincere. And so when she said that, I remember being like, well, that's completely okay for you to feel that way. And like, it's understandable. I'm like, so, you know, feel how you feel. And I still like you and I still want to get to know you. And I like where we're at right now. And I'd like to just continue getting to know you if you're good with that.
So acknowledge her feelings, mm-hmm. but yet stood strong what you really preferred or wanted.
Correct.
Yeah. He didn't waver. And
yeah, that's great.
Y'all know my personality. And so... I think prior to that, I'd always like really knocked men off their center. And there was something really profound, magnetic, and sexy that I didn't with him. And that he just stayed really solid, really just didn't budge. He's very earthy and grounded in that way and who he is and what he wants and his convictions. And so it literally changed the way I saw him in an instant, instantaneously. Whatever was coming up for me or like rub, it just immediately evaporated with how he responded to me.
Now, would you say, kind of characterizing the masculine feminine, that mm-hmm. he was strong in his masculine, mm-hmm. that shifted your feminine? I mean, could we use that language? Would that be appropriate for this?
Oh, yeah, okay. Totally.
Yeah.
We're about it.
I know.
We're about
it. And we talk about it all the time.
We're hip.
We're with it. Polarity.
Cool. So curious, because, you know, you've been in relationships before. Mm-hmm. It was this some, I mean, you shared like the dichotomy. It's like you probably in the past would have been like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Or like, oh.
Yeah, one of those two.
Okay. Yeah.
Swing the pendulum either way.
Swing, yeah.
Yeah.
limp. Yeah. So what changed in you that just allowed you to be so, as you know, as Heather said, grounded in yourself and the strong masculine in that moment?
I remember that I made this commitment to myself, again, while in that state of aloneness, that any woman that I would meet from that point forward, I would always be sincere with what I'm about, what my feelings are. In the past, I would curate what I would say for the purpose of creating attraction or for getting the woman to like me. And I was just done with that. Like, I was exhausted by that process. It blew up in my face countless times. Like, prior to meeting Heather, I had a relationship where I was married and I got divorced. And like, so it really blew up in my face, like in a big way. And so I was just done with that. And I realized that I cannot control how she's going to respond or how she's going to react. The only thing that I can control is how I show up. And so I just made a commitment to myself that I was going to be completely authentic and sincere with my intentions, with my feelings, with everything that I would share with her.
We'll get into the Zen Stoic in a moment, but you can articulate the Stoicism really well in the context of relationships, which is wonderful. But let me ask you a question about that, because it's like, you know, it's one thing to have like, oh, I know I need to do something differently compared to how I've done it in the past because it hasn't worked in the past. That's, for many people, that's different than actually doing it. Like, how do you, like, going from a thought to an embodied practice, like this is just who I am. I'm not wavering from that. Like, was there a moment that you noticed a shift when you're sitting on the couch over there, or when you're sitting in that process, or was it a process that occurred over time? Like, what, how did that work for you?
Well, I knew I needed to be authentic and sincere in myself, yeah, like as well as relationships, because mm-hmm, I lived a lot of my life essentially like trying to be whoever my audience or whoever was in front of me wanted me to be.
Right.
And I just realized I just kept running into problem after problem, like challenges with every relationship, every endeavor by being that way. And so it was very scary to just say what I thought or say what I felt. And so I just began by doing it with like small stakes things. Like, yeah, if I went to Starbucks and like got my order wrong, I wouldn't just be like, well, I guess I'm just going to drink this. Like, I would say something.
You're right, right, right.
Right. I would express like, hey, like again, in small things. And then over time, I'll just start expressing sincerely more and more. And it's like, that journey is not over. Like, to this day, I'm realizing like times or relationships or interactions where I wasn't that way. And so like, I still am working through like waves of it today, but it's ultimately very freeing. So the way I brought it from thought into action was just, I felt so much pain and so much loneliness from not being myself and not being sincere and everyone connecting with me because of this thing that I was presenting to them,
right.
That I was just done with it. Like, I was at a threshold and I was like, yeah, I don't care like how uncomfortable this is at first. Like, I'm going to do it.
I appreciate you pointing out like there's a moment, there's a process, there's a mm-hmm, practice. Mm-hmm. It's not like you're perfect at it, and that you still have to continually reflect and do that kind of work. Because mm-hmm, that's my experience in most things. It's not like, I mean, you can have like a aha moment, things mm-hmm, shift completely and you're a completely new person inside yourself. But my experience is most of the time it's kind of iterative
mm-hmm,
process over time. So
yeah,
thank you for sharing.
That's yeah, it was completely like that for me. So yeah, thank you for asking.
Yeah. 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 So you mentioned your personality.
God.
It's my favorite.
Yes. One of the many things I love about you is kind of your obnoxious approach to life. And I say that in a very loving way.
Obnoxious approach to life. Thank
yeah,
you.
Yeah.
Can I get a testimonial after this?
Yes. Okay. We'll come up with a different word than obnoxious, because that's kind of pejorative, but I didn't mean it that way.
I appreciate it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Heather lives loudly.
Yes. No, she really does. And I really appreciate the kind you take on, especially since we're kind of in the conscious and spiritual communities, you take on some of the icons and the belief systems in a really fun, playful way. And so I'm wondering, like, you know, that playful approach, mm-hmm, how does that show up in this relationship?
All day, every day.
No, literally all day, every day.
Yeah, it's the heart and center. Yeah. Neurologically, we learn best through play. We connect best through play. Yeah. And in levity and humor, it puts us into a state of more plasticity and flexibility. Like, our physical bodies literally move better with more flow and ease when we're in that guard down, playful state. So even, and this is something you have to walk a careful line with, but even when we're giving each other feedback, we'll usually do it in playful shit talking form. And then obviously whatever checks and balances to make sure that it landed, it's agreed upon, it's implemented.
Nice.
Yes.
Nice. Okay.
And that's how we roll. And it works quite well for us.
Can you speak to that, though? I think it's really important, because you said we want to kind of check, make sure it landed mm-hmm, and implemented, .. Talk a little bit about that, because I think that's important too.
Yeah. We're really blessed that that's not a high pain point, mm-hmm, like high rub, high tension part of our relationship, because I have anecdotally learned that, you know, feedback given, feedback agreed upon, and then feedback not implemented on is where a lot of relationships have that point of disconnect, rightfully so, because that would be incredibly frustrating and infuriating. So I can't speak to, I'm very thankful, grateful, blessed that I don't have a lot of experience to speak on as far as a non-implementation goes, but it's really just comes down to respect, respect and reverence, like for the sanctity of this, that I don't have to like double check his work in this weird maternal little boy way. I don't do that. Yeah, thank God.
It's a lot of like setting and fulfilling expectations. Like if I tell her I'm going to do something, this is again part of that practice of sincerity. Okay. It's like not making empty promises. Okay. Like in previous relationships, I had just wanted to say whatever would get me the approval in the moment. Okay. And so I'd make those empty promises. With her, I don't make those empty promises. Like I say it and I will do it. And if I don't do it, she will always remind me. She won't brood on it or anything like that. She will tell me and actually like be very upfront with it. So one thing that I love about the way that Heather has always given me feedback or just our dynamic in general is that she would never let anything slide, like even from the beginning. Like there was no like, oh, I guess I'll like pretend that I don't have that need right now. Like, no, she would tell me everything from the beginning, what she needed, what she wanted, and what would allow her to feel safe and loved. And she would always tell me in the beginning, and she would, you know, jokingly say like, I don't expect you to read my mind, and then would just tell me these things.
That's big.
That's really big.
Yeah.
Because most couples believe the other person's a mind reader.
Mm.
Or they operate from that assumption that that's to be true.
Yeah.
So how did you learn then in that case to just share so openly and honestly what you want, need, desire, how you see things?
From not for a long time.
Okay. So very similar.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. From not and feeling the effects of it, feeling that negative impact of that overgiving or that draining that occurs when you're, you know, really an open-hearted, loving woman who's in that, I think of that lover-girl archetype. Mm. And that is something that needs to be honored and protected. That's like really juicy stuff, you know? It's very powerful. It really like fills a home with energy and like fills him up and breathes life into him. Like I understand the energetic component of that and the value of that and how it's me being safe to like shower him in that has really like up-leveled us in every way possible. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of fruits to it. So with that, it's like, don't fuck with me.
Correct. Now, it would be... It wouldn't do justice to like the actual dynamic for me not to also share this part of it, because if we just talk about that of how Heather's very upfront and very open with her feedback, that doesn't encapsulate like where it starts to feel like magic for us.
Yeah, it's part of it.
It's part of it, right? There's a lot of people, a lot of couples who do that, but they only do that.
They rub each other raw.
Yeah. And they don't do the other things that are necessary to actually like allow the mechanism of that entire relationship to function optimally. So it's not just that she's upfront and sincere with things. It's also that every little thing that I do, so every little expectation that I set and do, she expresses gratitude for it as if it's the first time that I'm doing it. And everything that I didn't set an expectation, but surprise, like, oh, here's a coffee. I just grabbed it for you while I was out. Also showering in gratitude. So I'm always feeling appreciated for this. It has me want to continue doing these things for her. So it's the gratitude piece. And like we share that with each other. We say thank you to each other for everything, right? Just like it was in the beginning, every little detail. And so when feedback comes through of like, hey, like you didn't do this thing, or hey, like this is bothering me, like it's not taken personally. Like we still maintain the sweetness and the affection that makes the relationship and setting and fulfilling expectations worth doing, where we want to do it.
It's not work.
Right. It's not work. Yeah. Like we always laugh because we're like, you know, people say like relationships are work. It's like, we don't feel that way.
That sounds exhausting.
Yeah. Like we wouldn't describe it that way. Perhaps what we're doing may appear that way to other people. Cause yes, we do a lot of inner work on ourselves. Mm. We do have a lot of very intentional conversations if something's bothering us or whatever the case is, but it's counterbalanced with all these other things that are really enjoyable. Like the shit talking and playfulness that we have each and every day, right? Like we have that. We have, you know, we actually like each other as human beings, right? Very important thing.
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of couples that we've observed that they truly love each other, but they don't like each other. Mm. Like, they're like, I don't like the way it sounds when he breathes. It's like, I don't like the way he exists, but I love him. And so, like, we find it to be very important that we actually like talking with one another, that we actually like spending time together, that we don't need to be like on a vacation or doing something to enjoy ourselves. We can be just sitting on the couch, hanging out, eating snacks all day, and like, we're fine. Like, we love
fine.
That. Like, way more than fine. Yeah, it's wonderful. So it's a combination of all of those things. It's liking each other. It's being sincere with each other. It is expressing gratitude and appreciation consistently throughout, and being playful with one another throughout the whole process. Like, that's the energy, and that's the dynamic that we're creating with one another constantly.
I love that. And the snacks would be pancakes. If
they're yes, that's right.
Especially when Michael's over.
Yeah, yes. Exactly.
I am, fun fact, I am the first man that Heather has ever made pancakes for. So.
Yeah.
So
it's
just,
very
I
good
see
salesman.
That.
Salesman, yeah. He talked me into that on the second date. I was like, I don't really cook for men, so okay.
Yes.
Yeah. Nice. Mind ninja.
And I want to point out, you know, having actually lived with you guys on and off for the whole last year.
That's right, yeah.
That's
basically, yeah, we have a room in our house dedicated to you.
Yes, and I've used it.
Yes.
Yes. I share it with Master Poe and Coop, but the dogs.
Yeah.
I've actually seen all the things you guys are referring to, the playfulness and the openness and the appreciation. It's almost like every day is like back to the Zen. Part of the Zen Stoic thing is like just open to the awe of life and the amazingness of having a partner in front of you who just cares for you and loves you and serves you. I don't mean serves you in a bad way, but like devotion. Mm-hmm. Like
totally.
Devotion is a kind of a nice word.
Yeah.
To describe what I've seen you guys do.
Thank
it's
you.
Really
thank
cool.
you.
Yeah,
thank
yeah.
you for that.
Yeah. Conflict. I mean, there has to be things that arise in the relationship over the years that are could be seen as a conflict. Like, mm-hmm. how do we resolve this, whatever this is? And you don't have to necessarily go into the details mm-hmm. of the conflict itself, but can you kind of walk us through how you've done a conflict?
Yeah, we call you for a session.
we really did use Michael as a resource multiple times, and it was extremely effective.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, so effective. So, let's plug Michael for a second. Yeah. Because Michael taught us early on, and a super minor conflict that was, long story short, like brattiness. I would say that was the core of the issue.
Something of the sort.
And shockingly, there was brattiness in the space. I'm referring to myself, not calling you bratty. And there's something about getting to the core of things. And like you said, how I don't let things slide. It's not in a nitpicky way. It's in a preservation of the beauty of the relationship way. It's just, if something's not out of alignment, it needs to be recalibrated. It needs to be felt. Everyone needs to be heard. And I actually would really encourage getting outside assistance if a couple is having some sort of a conflict or especially something that seems like a pattern that maybe is repeating. So yeah, like, you were definitely super pivotal in helping us co-regulate and really make sure that we aired everything out in a container of one, that's just a container overall, getting somebody else in that's outside of your life and your constructs. And then also the quality of the container, which you held beautifully, I would hold as like the gold standard of how they could be held for couples. It needs to be held from anchoring in that place of love, connection, and solution, not down in the weeds of whatever's coming up, because that's not who you are as a person, and that's not who you are as a couple. That's some kind of a survival self or a dysregulated self coming into the space asking, am I still lovable? Am I going to be alone? Like, what's happening here? And so a container that is held up here, not down in the weeds of whatever spiral is coming up. Because, people spiral. That that happens. It's just part of the process. And the only way out is through sometimes. And then also with that, though, protecting your relationships. So when we usually go through things kind of separately, which is really convenient. So far, if one of us is kind of at a low point or in a difficult spot of mental health, whatever you want to call it, usually the other one of us is pretty stable, and we just kind of like stay out of each other's way as far as if somebody's processing something, what do you need? Like helped, heard, or hugged? And that's something that I've taught families and children that I've worked with, but it applies in adult relationship maybe even more. It's like, do you want me to come closer, stay here, or back off a little? And none of it's personal.
And I think that's a huge key, is nothing is personal.
Mm-hmm. No, but it's like if you lash out at each other, then it is. Yeah, if you make meaning out of things or make the projection point, make it about the person outside of you, or especially attacking character, like those are just non-negotiables. Like, completely off the table on like the worst moment of the worst day. That's just not even available.
Mm-hmm. You know, I did one of my reels. Thanks, Alex.
Shout out.
When I was in Ecuador, answering a question about co-regulation thing that you shared, which I appreciate. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
And one of the other ones that I did was around you guys. I mentioned you guys as a couple. I'm talking about rituals that couples do that benefit them to keep them cohesive and connected and stuff. And I mentioned you guys walking the kids.
Walking
around,
the babies.
I don't know where they are.
The mysteries. Right
over there. four-legged kin. What other rituals do you guys have on a daily basis to kind of keep you guys connected? Besides walking the dogs in the morning.
The bookends of every day are snuggles.
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 Yes. So like before we go into bed and when we wake up, like I'll set my alarm for half hour earlier than I'm actually going to get out of bed for the purpose of just cuddling, being together, like as the first part of the day. And then before we go to sleep, it's the same thing. So it's one that like we never planned, but it just essentially came about like naturally and has now become essentially a staple for the day. So I remember there was one time I got out of bed without doing it and I like walked back to the bed. Like 5 minutes later, I'm like, I'm missing something here. And I just realized that priming the day and ending the day in that way has been a really like key component of connection for us.
So is your love language just touch in this case?
Oh, this is, so this brings up a fun topic. Is the love languages. Is that like for Heather and I, our love languages are both words of affirmation and physical touch in that order.
Okay.
So in essence, we love talking to each other. We love giving each other compliments and it never gets old for us.
Nice.
And we also love cuddling. So
that's kind of perfect.
Perfect match.
Yeah.
Exactly. Maybe not everyone is going to be in a relationship where the other person shares their love language. Although I would say if you're looking for the type of relationship that is this like safe haven where you're always feeling understood, you never have to translate your love, then that would be a high recommendation.
I think it's a hack of sorts. Mm-hmm. It's something that people, I mean, obviously humans are wired for adaptation and we can learn to modify. Though I think it speaks to a deeper cellular compatibility with one another. And we're just so compatible that like, we have intentionality and rituals and all that stuff, but like we have such a safety and out of compatibility to fall back on. And I think that's one way that you can kind of discern or in earlier stages is checking in with the love languages.
And I could imagine human design as well.
That definitely plays into it as well. Like how does your energy interact with one another? So the compatibility thing I think is one of the things that allows us to have the type of relationship that we have. And it's not just the compatibility, right? It is also the rituals and the intentionality in our everyday. So like, yes, we'll have that walk every morning. We, for the most part, we'll have our meals together unless one of us is like on a call with a client or something like that. But for the most part, we're having all of our meals together when we can, going on a second walk in the day, especially when it's nice out. Right. So just these little things that always have us feeling connected to one another. And I like, we have a lot of fun with it. Like anything that we're going to do for one another, we have this very like key policy that like, we don't do anything for the other person that we don't actually genuinely want to do. So this may sound counterintuitive to like maybe a lot of the relationship advice out there, but when Heather and I first got together, one thing that we agreed on was that we wanted to, of course, put each other first and all that, but we also realized at the same time that we put first our own North Star in life, our own individual experience. And almost like, it's going to sound silly, but like honoring like the sacred selfishness of like making sure that individually we are nourished and we feel our cup is filled from within. And as a result, then we're able to actually put each other first. And because we both respect that in one another, of like, I know her North Star is her North Star, mine is mine. And so we honor that within ourselves and within each other. We do our own individual inner work, and thus the compatibility is just amplified like significantly as a result of that. And so we're able to put each other first because we put ourselves first. So it's like this paradoxical existence that where all that freedom, peace, happiness, and safety exists.
That's awesome. I love the paradox of that. What questions did I not ask that you'd like to answer about your relationship?
Pass that one to you while I sit with that for a moment. That's a good question. You're such a good interviewer, Michael.
Thank you.
What questions have you not asked that we would like to answer? Well, what I just said was one of them.
I took
the liberty of sharing it anyway.
Thank you.
Ask us about the honeymoon phase.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So talk to me about the honeymoon phase. And what does that mean for you guys?
Thank you, Michael, for that question.
Thank you. That
utterly unique question that you came up with all on your own.
Straight inspired channeled question. Thank you, Michael.
Yep.
I feel like there's something present for you.
Oh, for me? Okay, yeah, cool. So we... that's great. When we first got together, we moved in with each other 5 months into the relationship. Truthfully, had the circumstances been what they were at those 5 months earlier, we probably would have moved in sooner. And one thing that we would always get is we'd get a lot of like grief from other people around that we were moving too fast, that we needed to like slow things down, and that, oh, just wait until you're together for a year. Just wait till you live together. Like, things are going to change. Things are going to get really different. And like, you're just in the honeymoon phase right now. Our life has gotten easier and happier and more fun since living together. And it continues to do so every day. So whatever these warnings were from these well-meaning people were, you know, I'm sure well-intentioned and
semi
well intentioned. Yeah,
we can talk about projections.
Yeah. Maybe semi well.
That's one of my bugaboos.
But like, we had, you know, these people who were essentially trying to warn us about this honeymoon phase that we were in, and that we're like blind to like the reality of things. Now, again, coming back to Heather and I, we feel in our experiences like this perma honeymoon. And it's for all the reasons that we described before. It's like most people are in a honeymoon phase and what feels like this like perfect, nothing can possibly go wrong phase because they are performing to each other.
Right.
They're not being real. They're not, you know, like actually expressing what it is that they want. They might be doing the gratitude and like the thank you for everything and being really appreciative. They might be really fun, but they might not actually be sharing like what's on their mind and what's in their heart. And when you choose not to share those things and you wait until you're comfortable enough to finally share them, then you've had this like build up and maybe even created resentment, and then suddenly that like magic in the air is gone. And so the way like what we found is that most people who are in a honeymoon phase are essentially just trying to outrun their first fight rather than just being honest and expressing to each other what's real for them. And so with regards to
run their first fight. I love that. I love the
yeah.
It's the like image this, of that. That's great.
invisible bubble that they just yeah. don't want to burst.
Right.
Almost like walking on eggshells.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting too, because I could imagine for many couples, and this is my experience too, is like you still don't even get to the point of being comfortable to start sharing, because you learn how not to for so long that you continue to do. And we know through liberation coaching mm-hmm. that it can come out sideways mm-hmm. in multiple
sure
different ways.
It can,
psychological
down.
And physiological and all kinds of
that's right.
interesting things. So you know there's health consequences too of not being maybe radically honest mm-hmm. at the beginning as a foundational to the relationship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, completely true. And what I found is that while it might be scary to share things, especially like for men to share their emotions, to be vulnerable is culturally not encouraged. Right? It's starting to become more encouraged now, where men are being told to embrace their feelings, that it's okay to cry, it's okay to express what's on your heart or when you're having a challenge. But there are still many, many people that still live in that old paradigm of like, no, I gotta be stoic. Right. I can't show my emotions. I can't show that I'm having any struggle or challenge. I need to just fucking have this perma smile on my chest, you know, chest out, chin held high. And I mean, it's a bullshit facade. It's a performance that somebody's right. putting on. And those emotions are not going anywhere just because you pretend that they mm-hmm. don't exist. Like, they're not just going to be like, all right, cool. Like, I guess we'll come back later. Like, no, they're there and they build up and they compound within you. Mm-hmm. So one thing that really helped in the beginning is like, I never was vulnerable in my past relationships with what I was feeling and what my struggles were and the challenges that I was experiencing. And I realized that, but I also didn't know how to be vulnerable.
Okay.
So the first vulnerable thing that I shared with Heather was exactly that. I said, hey, I'm going to share something with you. I have a lot of challenge being vulnerable. I actually don't know how to be vulnerable. And so like, I'm going to do my best to share with you what I'm feeling and like, please ask me. And she did. And every time that I do share with Heather, those vulnerabilities, she always just, even if it seems like it's something like about her that's bothering me, she realizes that it's completely impersonal and allows me to feel safe in my expression. Okay. In the past, one of the reasons why I didn't share vulnerably, and I'm sure there are a lot of people who will resonate when I share this, is that when, like, for example, as a man, I would share with my partner, I'd say, I'm feeling this way or I'm uncomfortable in this way. And I'd share what was there. And I'd be in a state of some sort, negative state. And then they would get dysregulated. And then I'd have to comfort them for feeling their feelings about my feelings. And then I just learned not to share them.
Yeah.
With Heather, it's been completely the opposite. Like she like becomes completely impartial and just creates a safe container for me to share what I need to share. And like I've cried in front of her multiple times, like, and I feel completely safe doing so.
Let me ask you as a follow-up question, because I imagine, correct me if I'm wrong, like, he shares something with you. You hold that space for him, but you might still have feelings about what he shared.
Mm.
Is it then like you just sit with them and you bring them up later because you want to give him the opportunity to share and then you can share later? And then it's kind of a back and forth process. Like, how does that work for you?
Ideally, yeah, that's how it would go. I can't remember really any times that it hasn't gone that way.
Mm-hmm.
It's not personal when the other person is going through something, and it comes down to your personal capacity to be with your own emotions.
Yeah.
And so when I hear that about ex-partners, I'm hearing a woman that wasn't able to meet herself internally, hold space for herself, had probably a lot of unfelt, unprocessed stuff in her own internal circuitry.
Right.
That was then just activated when, you know, that co-dysregulation is a thing. So, yeah, it just comes back to take the space and the time you need and be very selfish, unapologetically selfish in your path, your spiritual path and your connection to yourself. Because then, yeah, it's like someone's coming to you and has something coming up, and you know that's a them thing.
And I think one thing that's also important with that regard to we'll call it sacred selfishness. Of like, you know, how do you bring yourself back into,
we're gonna trademark that.
a state of regulation and whatnot. So just as an example, like I really love the sport of Brazilian jiu-jitsu, mm-hmm. right? Something I've been training for like 7 years at this point. And there will be times where Heather wants to hang out and I want to go to jiu-jitsu. And I will say like, oh, I'm going to go to jiu-jitsu. And then she feels like a little sad that we're not hanging out. But then if I start to waver and I'm like, oh, well, maybe I'll stay and hang out. Like she doesn't let me do things for her that I don't want to do. And like we hold each other accountable in that way because we understand that if you start doing something for someone because like for them, not because you actually genuinely want to do it as well, then you start to, it can be the breeding ground for resentment. Mm. And when you start to resent somebody, I mean, like you start to lose out on a lot of safety, a lot of rapport, a lot of connection with that person. And then suddenly like these small little issues, like, you know, somebody ate my candy bar or no, we're healthy. Somebody ate,
yeah, so
somebody
like,
ate my tangerine.
Exactly.
You know, like suddenly that becomes this big issue of like, they must not love me because they ate my tangerine.
Yeah. Well said.
Mm-hmm. That's actually a food for thought. I do want to sit with that. I think that's a really interesting concept to operationalize in the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Sacred selfishness. Thank you guys for this really interesting, engaging, and a wonderful conversation. It's I have to imagine it's going to be inspiring for a lot of people who are in relationships and want to get a sense of like what it could be like if we lived this particular way. And everyone's unique. You know, they bring their own personalities and their own skills and own capacities and stuff like that. But I think you guys laid out some almost universals that could be operationalized in any and all relationships, whether it's a radical honesty or these kind of agreements, the playful approach, the sacred selfishness. I love these things. So thank you guys for this conversation.
Thank you so much, Michael.
Yeah.